Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Psalms chapter 67, verses 1 through 7, a short psalm today. It is not a Davidic psalm. It is a psalm of prayer and praise. I will entitle it, Make Your Face Shine Upon Us. The heading of the psalm says, For the director of music with stringed instruments, a psalm, a song. Well, the heading is very simple. There is a question, though, what is the difference between a psalm and a song? The psalm is described as both. Well, here are the differences between a psalm and a song, and also a hymn thrown in for good measure. This is from a great little clip that I found in Christianity.StackExchange. A song is any song. A psalm is a particular type of song. A psalm is a song from the book of Psalms. And a psalm is often accompanied by music. You've noticed as we've gone through the headers, they often mentioned musical instruments. Like, for example, this header says, For the director of music with stringed instruments. So a psalm is a particular type of song. It comes from the book of Psalms, and it's often accompanied with music. A hymn, on the other hand, is a song of praise, and it's often unaccompanied by music. And when I say it's a song of praise, that distinguishes it from psalms, because although some psalms have praise in them, of course, but there's also a lot of other stuff in psalms, such as, Please help me, O God, prayer, petitions, sometimes laments. Now in verse 1, the psalmist says, God be gracious to us and bless us and cause his face to shine upon us. Now that's somewhat of a metaphor. I think even in English we can understand that. If somebody puts their beaming face to you, that means they like you and they want to act favorably towards you. In fact, that's what the metaphor means. To shine upon you means to show you favor. Here's some other scriptures where that metaphor is used. Numbers 6, 24 through 25. This is where Moses was talking to Aaron. This is, in fact, part of Aaron's blessing that Aaron was to speak on the people. The Lord bless you and keep you. And this is in Numbers 6, 24 and 25. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. In my church, whoever's closing down the festivities always quotes this. You've heard it a lot, I'm sure. Make his face shine upon you. Psalm 31:16 says, Make your face to shine upon your servant. Save me in your loving kindness. Now, interestingly enough, that's the NASB translation, but the Holman Christian Study Bible translation of Psalms 31:16 completely drops the metaphor and says this, Show your favor to your servant as opposed to make your face to shine upon your servant. So that translation shows us exactly what the metaphor means, to show your favor to us. So the psalmist is saying, God, it's a prayer. God, please show favor to us. Make your face shine upon us. Selah. Selah, of course, is that untranslatable word that nobody knows exactly what it means. It probably means take a pause. This is an interlude. Think about what we've just said. Probably a musical notation. Pause in the music. And then verse 2 says, in NASB translation, that your way may be known on the earth. In other words, show favor to us, be gracious to us, bless us. Why? In order that your ways, God, the way that you operate, may be known on the earth. So the idea here is that when Israel is blessed, the nations of the world will see it, and they want to be blessed too. Not only God's grace, his blessings, his favor, but also at the end of verse 2, his salvation, that God's ways, his providence, will be known on the earth and among all nations. There's parallel there, earth in the first part of verse 2, nations in the last part of verse 2. In fact, that parallelism there helps us to translate the word earth, because as you know, earth can be translated as land, haaretz. But the context in verses 3 through 5 shows that the translation should obviously be earth and not land. It's not talking about, these verses are not talking about, may God's ways be known in Israel, but rather over the whole planet. Look at how many times nations and peoples are mentioned in verses 3 through 5. Verse 3, let the peoples praise you. Let the peoples praise you at the end of verse 3. Twice, peoples, that's everybody. Verse 4, let the nations be glad and sing. That's nations, the Gentile nations all over the world. For you will judge the peoples, that's the Gentile nations again. Guide the nations on the earth. At the end of verse 4, the nations, not just Israel. Verse 5, let the peoples praise you. first part of the verse, last part of verse 5. Let all the peoples praise you. So this is obviously a psalm in which the psalmist is acting for God's wonderful characteristics, his glorious characteristics, to be broadcast over the whole planet so that all might know the God of Israel, Yahweh. The psalmist shows that he is confident that the knowledge of God would spread beyond Israel. And so any Pharisee at the time of Jesus, any narrow, nationalistic, particularist Pharisee who thought that salvation was only for the Jews, it would have been good for him to note this and read this psalm. Now this blessing, this knowing of God's way that is spread over all the nations, that actually came to pass through the work of Jesus, because now people in every part of this globe now acknowledge Yahweh, the God of Israel, as the God of the universe, the God of the whole planet, the God of all the nations. We go down to Psalm 67, 6 through 7, and we will finish up this short psalm. The psalmist continues, "The earth has yielded its produce. God, our God, blesses us. God blesses us that all the ends of the earth may fear him." Now in verse 6, earth could be translated land. The land has yielded its produce. But when you go back and look at all the other places where Haaretz is translated as earth in verses 3 through 5, as I've just done, well, continuing on with the context, it should be earth, not land. However, I could make a case that the word should be translated as land, because the psalmist says God blesses us. Well, who's the us? The us would be the Israelites. So we could say the land has yielded its produce. The land of Israel has yielded its produce, and God has blessed us Israelites. So that works too. But however you translate it, the point is that this blessing from God, this produce that the land yields, that the earth yields, is a blessing, and that blessing has a purpose, has a consequence. Verse 7, God blesses us that, for the reason that, for the purpose that, all the ends of the earth may fear him. In other words, Israel is blessed. People will look at that and say, well, Israel's blessed. Who is Israel's God? That would be Yahweh. So Yahweh must be true. So the psalmist is acting like Israel is sort of an evangelistic tool to bring the nations in. There's a lot of sense in that. The New Testament Israel is the church, and the more the church shows the love and the beauty and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ in its actions and in its members, well, then the more people in this sick world that we live in will be attracted to the church. We could read verse 7 this way, God blesses us Christians so that all the ends of the earth may fear him, so that all the ends of the earth may say, why is that Christian so happy? Why? He used to be a drug addict. Why is it now that he is living a clean life? He's got a wife and kids. He's got a happy family. He's not full of bitterness anymore. He's not full of revenge. Something happened to him. What is it? The power of a changed life is one of the most wonderful evangelistic tools that the church could ever have. Now, we need to avoid some extremes here. I have heard hyper-faith people say we need to be blessed financially and rich so that other people will want to know God. I remember I was pointing out to a hyper-faith advocate one time about the poverty in India, and he was saying that we need to preach the prosperity gospel even in India. I said, well, how are you going to preach that to these poor people? How's that going to fly? He says, oh, it'll fly very easily, because the poor people will look at the rich preacher and say, well, God's blessed him. Well, God can bless me too. I should have known. They've got an answer for everything. Well, the answer to that is, you want to encourage people to get rich like the preacher, all you do is produce a little materialist just like the preacher is, or you'll produce a lot of frustration and angst when the lowly poor believer doesn't get rich. Well, verse 7, when it says God blesses us, it does mention the yielding of the produce, which is a material thing, but I think we need to take it generally. God blesses us in general, spiritual blessings as well as temporal blessings, and then people will be attracted to us. So let me summarize. There are two extremes to avoid about God blessing us in order that non-believers will come into the fold. There's two extremes to avoid. One extreme is that when we say that God blesses us, we are saying that those who follow God are blessed in every particular time and circumstance. Now, we know that's not true. Look at the book of Job. Job gives the lie to that proposition. God does not bless us in every particular time and circumstance. How about Hebrews chapter 11, the Faith Hall of Fame? those gentlemen, including one who was sawn in half, those Christians who had their goods stolen from them, or those believers who had their goods stolen from them and who were placed in jail, they weren't blessed in every particular time and circumstance. Paul the Apostle ended up in jail at the end of his career. So when a psalmist says that God blesses us, it doesn't mean it all the time, 24/7, 365 days a year, because there are trials and suffering and tribulation that the believer must go through in God's providence and in his good timing and in his will. So that's one extreme. And another extreme is to say that those who don't follow God are automatically cursed. In other words, we don't want to say believers, they're blessed, and non-believers, oh man, their life is hell. We know that's not true. For one thing, God makes the rain fall on the just and the unjust. So when that happens, the unjust are blessed. Matthew 5:45, so that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. This is Jesus speaking. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. So unrighteous people are not cursed all the time. We see this also in Psalms 73, verses 3 through 5. The psalmist says, and the psalmist here is Asaph, the psalmist says in Psalms 73, verses 3 through 5, for I envied the arrogant. I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have an easy time until they die, and their bodies are well fed. They are not in trouble like others. They are not afflicted like most people. So Asaph, the psalmist there, is stating what we all know, that you know a lot of wicked people are just living the life of Riley. So when we say that God blesses the just and punishes the unjust, we're talking about in general and in the long term. At a particular time or place, a Christian might be suffering and a wicked person might be prospering. So we need to keep that in mind. Now, I mentioned that the blessings that the psalmist says that are poured upon us, us Israelites, us believers, in this psalm are physical blessings. It's produce. And I also said that those blessings might include spiritual blessings also. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown backs me up on that. They say that the physical produce of the land is a physical symbol of all the spiritual blessings God pours upon the earth. So the blessings, whether physical or spiritual, have a purpose that all the ends of the earth may fear him in verse 7. The implication is that the blessings of Israel will cause the Gentiles to be jealous and thus come after God. And so, ladies and gentlemen, with that happy note, we are finished with Psalms 67. We are now prepared to go to Psalm 68, which I will call God Shall Scatter His Enemies. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.